to the support of Palestine, liberation of Palestine from river to the sea, and also for the support for all the oppressed people all over the world.
Quds Day has proven to be more than just a celebratory occasion. It is a day that unifies people and brings them together around the Palestinian cause.
The crowds that gathered in solidarity with Gaza to commemorate this day have proven the wisdom of the Islamic Revolution in Iran by establishing an international day for Al-Quds as a constant reminder for the Palestinian cause. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Thousands of protesters have flocked to central London on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan to honour the call of International Quds Day. The annual event was established by Imam Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran in 1979, to express solidarity with the Palestinians and inculcate a Muslim-led opposition to Zionism.
With the ongoing genocide in Gaza unfolding before the world's eyes, this year's protest has taken on extra significance and emotion. It's because people are standing up to a Zionist supremacist entity which has thus far murdered over 33,000 people while still not being able to destroy the capabilities of the resistance.
Due to its popularity, many attempts have been made by pro-Israel groups to ban the Al-Quds rally. And this year, these lobbying efforts fall within the wider context of Zionists and their agents at the top of government trying to get all Palestine marches banned since last October. Efforts that have thus far been resisted by police and other elements within the establishment. Those on the march steadfastly reject any attempts to ban it.
It's very contradictory. In a country that promotes freedom of speech around the world, human rights and democracy around the world, they want to stop people from protesting, not only these issues, but many other issues. And it's our duty as citizens of this country and the West to continue supporting, through democratic means and protest, the cause of Palestine.
When you look at the counter-demonstrators, they're a hopscotch of people, Zionists, far-right, British nationalists and so on and so forth, extreme-right, nasty elements of British society. They're all on that side. So if you want to ban anyone, ban that lot. We're very representative of British society, especially London society. We're white, black, green, brown, every religion, every colour you can imagine, we're all here.
I'm here to show solidarity with the people in Gaza, especially who are suffering genocide, and also show solidarity with our brothers and sisters of all faiths and none who are calling upon our government to uphold international law.
The people of Gaza have won the admiration of the world with their steadfastness against this unprecedented genocide, but as they stand on the brink of a deliberate famine engineered by the Zionist entity, it has scarcely been as important for the voice of the world at rallies like Al-Quds Day to shout loudly for justice and liberation for Palestine. Issa Kadhimi, London.
Down with America, down with Israel. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. These were some of the slogans that reverberated across Indian-administered Kashmir to commemorate the International Quds Day. Thousands of people, including women and children, poured onto the streets across the region after Friday prayer in a show of solidarity with Palestinians. Holding banners and placards, the protesters condemned Israel's war crimes committed against Palestinians in Gaza Strip.
6 months of war has seen unprecedented destruction in Gaza, where houses have been knocked down and hospitals bombed. Thousands of children have been killed, relief workers attacked. The onslaught on Palestinians has shaken the conscience of humanity. This wanton killing and destruction must stop.
People cutting across religious divide have come out today to condemn Israel's genocide in Gaza. Innocent children are being killed every day. It's high time Muslim world and those who believe in humanity unite against Israel's atrocities.
The protesters denounced what they call the criminal silence of the international community over the mass killings of Palestinians. They also condemned Israeli deadly airstrikes on Iranian embassy's consular building in Syria. Since Israeli regime began its onslaught on October 7, more than 33,000 people have been killed.
I want to call on international community to play their critical role in getting Palestinians their inalienable right to life. Also, I call on the religious class of the world, including Pope Francis, that humanitarian ceasefire should be implemented in the occupied territory of Gaza, and Palestinians should be given unrestricted access to the life-saving aid. And I call on Palestinian people that not only the day of Quds, we are with you every day, and call on that we will stand with you by thick and by thin.
The protesters also urged the Indian government to intervene and help restore peace in Gaza. Ever since the founder of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, declared last Friday of Ramadan as International Quds Day, every year millions of people across the world take to the streets on this day to remind people of the Palestinian cause.
As part of International Quds Day, people here in Kashmir have held rallies to express solidarity with the people of Palestine amid the genocidal onslaught in Gaza. The protesters called on the international community to break its silence and unite against Israel. Said Ali Safir, Indian administered Kashmir.
Tempers are running high in Pakistan over Israel's onslaught in Gaza. In a dramatic incident, a KFC restaurant in Pakistan-administered Kashmir was set ablaze during an anti-US-Israel protest. Following the incident, police detained over 50 individuals who were accused of attacking the restaurant in the Mirpur district.
We do not support the burning of KFC, but we want to boycott it as it is in support of genocide. We stand with boycott and we do boycott. We do not want them, we just want them not to fund Israel and help them in their genocide.
The arson comes as US-Israeli genocide in Gaza shows no signs of abating. The regime's attacks on all areas of the besieged territory, including hospitals, schools and aid convoys, continue.
We are already seeing the impact on the economy, on the financial decline of McDonald's and boycott. It's huge. Even in some countries, in Arab countries, those outlets are being closed because nobody is buying it.
Free! Free!
The ongoing genocide in Gaza has fueled anger and frustration among people worldwide, prompting calls for boycotts against entities believed to support Israel financially or politically.
Boycott is something that we are, this is what we feel from our heart, from inside, that we don't want to support their economy. We don't want to support the companies that are supporting the Israeli soldiers. So, for that, we need to boycott. I know this is not a permanent solution, but we have to boycott.
Authorities are now faced with the challenge of managing the fallout from the incident and preventing further escalation of tensions.
As tempers run high in Pakistan due to the call for boycotting pro-US and pro-Israeli brands, the targeted destruction of a KFC restaurant represents a symbolic reaction of the people, both locally and globally, against US-Israeli genocide in Gaza. Nasik Azmi, Islamabad.
Israeli newspaper Maariv published an article saying Turkey is seeking to enhance relations with Israel. Turkish Agency for Combating Disinformation denied the claims in a statement. The agency said the claim in the Israeli media that senior Turkish officials sent a message saying we want to improve relations with Israel is not true. Turkey said its temporary charged affair of Turkish embassy to Tel Aviv was summoned on the 25th of March, and that claims by Israeli media that Ankara proposed that the two countries' ambassadors return mutually is not correct. The thing that forced Emer Çelik, AK Party spokesperson, to point out Israeli crimes in a statement to assure that his government stands against what Israel is doing.
The dead human bodies and corpses found around the Shifa Hospital in Gaza once again clearly showed the genocide committed by Israel. It is necessary to implement the ceasefire decision in the Gaza Strip.
This subject has been considered sensitive for Turkey, especially after the ruling party lost the local election. Many analysts suggested one of the reasons was the AKP government not fully cutting ties with Israel. Many voters left notes on electoral papers such as, "You sold Gaza, we will sell you as well. And we will not vote for a government that does not cut a trade with Israel."
"I am studying in the UK, but I came back here to cast my vote because I strongly oppose trading with Israel and want it to stop. I actively participate in rallies in the UK and personally boycott companies and products that support Israel. I believe that every penny spent on these entities translates into bullets that target Palestinians. And I am committed to taking action to support their cause."
Overall, trading with other countries is generally acceptable. However, considering the recent aggression on Gaza, Israel has demonstrated a disregard for international laws. Therefore, I believe that trade should be temporarily halted and all ports closed to convey to Israel the gravity of its actions. Israel's persistent aggression, disregard for United Nations resolutions and human rights, and obstructions of aid delivery necessitate a strong response. Turkey provides essential materials to Israel, such as copper, cement, iron, and food. Therefore, if Turkey were to halt trade, Israel might retaliate in kind.
Turkish citizens have been taking to the streets since the beginning of the aggression on Gaza, demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. They have also called on the government to sever all ties with Israel. Analysts say the public want to send messages to the president through rallies and social media campaigns. However, it seems Erdogan is turning a deaf ear to their calls for action. Erdogan, who tried to contain his people with the pro-Palestinians rallies and slogans, now finds himself not only criticized for double standards, but also grappled with losses in local elections. Rahşan Saglam, Istanbul.
The Islamic resistance in Iraq has been standing in solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza by carrying out retaliatory operations in the region. Resistance forces in Iraq have started their operations by striking a number of U.S. military bases in Iraq and Syria in response to Washington's support for Israel. The operations have now entered a new phase as Israeli positions have been directly targeted in various locations such as Haifa, Eilat, and elsewhere.
We have always been firm in our stance to support the people of Palestine. The Palestinian cause is central to the axis of resistance that has supported the people of Gaza by striking Israeli positions. The regime's positions, whether it's ports in the Mediterranean or elsewhere, are targeted using ballistic missiles, drones, and all other weapons by our brothers in Yemen, Lebanon, and here in Iraq. The operations are clear evidence that the axis of resistance works in harmony and has the strategic potential and the means to pressure Israel and those states that support the systematic killing of innocent civilians.
The intensification of the attacks on Israeli positions shows that the massacres being committed by the regime in Gaza will not remain unanswered. The second phase of the operations, which directly targeted Israeli positions, proves that regional resistance groups are able to inflict serious damage to Israel's maritime and airspace interests. Resistance groups in Iraq and across the region have approved their ability to respond to the Israeli crimes against innocent civilians. They vow that their operations will intensify even more as long as the genocidal war on Gaza continues. Muslim Salem, Baghdad.
Under the title, Blood of the Free, and as part of the activities scheduled to commemorate Al-Quds International Day, the Permanent Committee of Al-Quds International Day organized a political forum this Tuesday at Al-Assad Library in Damascus. The Iranian ambassador said that defending Palestinians is the duty of the free world.
We will continue to defend Palestine because it is a fundamental principle, not a time-bound interest. All free people in the world must support the Palestinian people, as today we witnessed the Zionist entity committing various crimes, from killing innocent people to the recent attack on the embassy building. The response of Islamic Republic of Iran will be proportional to the Zionist assassination crime.
During the ceremony, Syrian and Palestinian researchers and specialists focused on the need to preserve the achievements made in Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. They condemned the Israeli criminal aggression against the Iranian embassy.
We offer our condolences to the Islamic Republic of Iran on the martyrdom of Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi and his comrades who were martyred in the Zionist attack on the Iranian embassy building in Damascus. We affirm Syria's solidarity with Iran, which is facing these attacks due to the hysteria of the defeated entity in its war against the Palestinian people in Gaza.
The researchers considered that Al-Quds International Day should be an opportunity to increase public pressure on the international community to force the Israeli regime to stop its war on Gaza.
The Zionist enemy is trying to send a message that resistance comes at a high cost through the destruction of Gaza, killing and genocide, unaware that our peoples cannot be intimidated. Al-Aqsa flood operation overthrew and buried all the sectarian projects sown by Western colonialism and the Zionist entity.
What makes Al-Quds International Day this year special is the steadfastness of the resistance and the people of Gaza, who thwarted the goals of the Israeli enemy.
The symposium concluded that Al-Quds International Day has consolidated the concept of resistance, while Al-Aqsa flood operation proved that with strong faith, the oppressed Palestinian people can achieve victory over the Zionist occupation. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
On Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure, from wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to You for the hope of Your rewards. So, bless Muhammad, the best of Thy creation, the summoner to Thy truth. Exalt me with Thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with Thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but Thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely, Thou art the all-forgiving, the all-compassionate.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. Millions of people have taken to the streets across the world to mark the International Quds Day and voice their support for the Palestinian people in their struggle against the Israeli occupation. This year's Quds Day, however, seems to be different from previous years. Israel's genocide and war on the Gaza Strip over the past 6 months has already sparked numerous protests across the globe. People have been calling on their governments to take practical measures against Israel in order to force the regime to stop its atrocities against the Palestinian people. Joining us on tonight's Spotlight, we have former UN weapons inspector Scott Ritter, joining us from Bethlehem, New York. And we also have board member of Africa for Palestine, Mr. Farid Issak, joining us from Johannesburg.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Ritter. This International Quds Day is different. It's charged with more energy. It has more purpose this year because of what's going on in Gaza. How important has this year's Quds Day been from your perspective?
Well, I have to be honest and point out that I'm not a Muslim, so I'm superficially knowledgeable of Quds Day and its and its relevance. But I would imagine that for people of faith, a day such as this where you reflect on your faith, you reflect on the sources of your faith, that Palestine must factor into it. And the struggle that's ongoing today for a free Palestinian state. But it's also been expanded now because we see a situation where Iran itself now has been placed under attack, and we are looking at the potential of a broader conflict between Iran and Israel, and so this also has to weigh heavily upon the minds of people who are celebrating Quds Day.
Mr. Farid Issak, International Quds Day, it provides an opportunity for people around the world to express support for the Palestinian cause. Regarding the message that this day harbors, Hezbollah leader Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, who also spoke earlier today, has in the past said the message of this day is that Palestine will never be forgotten. How important is a day like this in raising awareness about Palestinians and their cause, especially with the ongoing genocide taking place in Gaza?
Well, a day like this, or Al-Quds Day, which is commemorated, celebrated, at least in the last Friday of Ramadan, it is always of consequence. It is, of course, particularly consequential this year with the ongoing Nakba, or genocide, taking place in Gaza. But its importance lies in the fact that the Focus Day, although it is commemorated only once a year, and of course the mass mobilization that we have seen. Said Hassan Nasrallah said, you know, okay, fine, that it's a day that Palestine and Palestinians will never be forgotten. But perhaps it's a bit more than just that. It's not just not forget, but I mean, well, I'm sure in other parts of his speech you would have indicated this. It is a rededication of our commitment to ensure the liberation of the Palestinians. I also want to point out that although Al-Quds is of particular sanctity to Muslims throughout the world, in the context of the Palestinian struggle, Al-Quds has come to symbolize the larger struggle of liberation that many Christians and non-religious Palestinians and Arabs, that they have come to identify with as a symbol for the liberation of Palestine. And I'm not trying to reduce it to an Arab cause, but I am saying that the importance of Al-Quds has in fact transcended the narrower Muslim attachment to Masjid al-Aqsa and to Al-Quds.
Scott Ritter, about these demonstrations that we've been seeing, just the global rallies leading up to the massive demonstrations that are taking place today, do you think that they've united the global audience against the Zionist regime's crimes, not just its thirst for blood in Gaza, but its apartheid in the West Bank as well?
I think we have to be very honest with ourselves here. You know, where was all this on October 6th? Where was this all this last year on Quds Day? I mean, the fact of the matter is Israel, you know, this political Zionist entity has always been genocidal in its approach towards the Palestinians and its approach towards the Lebanese Hezbollah. They've shown total disregard for the lives of any of their potential opponents. And the other thing is, while it's, of course, heartening to see demonstrations in the streets, what does it mean for the governments? I mean, it's one thing to see people in the streets, but where is Egypt? Where is Saudi Arabia? Where is Jordan? Where is the United Arab Emirates when it comes to really standing up? The only government that has put it all out there amongst the Arab world is the Houthi in Yemen. I mean, we see Hezbollah, but Hezbollah is somewhat constrained because out of concerns of escalation. We now see Iran being put in a similar situation where it's going to have to make a decision on how much they're willing to escalate this conflict. Yes, we talk about Israel, we talk about the crimes of Israel, but we've seen the world willing to turn a blind eye to these crimes if they can be assuaged with the promise of normalcy. This is what the whole concept of normalization of relations with Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, the Gulf Arab states was all about. And my fear is that if there is a ceasefire, if this conflict is brought to an end, if the slaughter of Palestinian civilians is brought to a close, that the world will abandon Palestine and the cause of a Palestinian state once again.
Let's focus just for a moment on what's been taking place in Iran, not just today, but overall in these Quds Day rallies. The Iranians, they show up in massive numbers around the country for international Quds Day. It was heightened definitely this year, but what are your thoughts on the reasons for this unwavering support that Iranian people show for the Palestinian cause?
Well, it's very much, it's a question of the Iranian people, yes. but not just the Iranian people, it's also the government inside Iran that have been consistent from the day that the Islamic Revolution first occurred. One of the first causes that that the Islamic Revolution took up was the question of the ongoing genocide, even as early as then, against the Palestinian people. And so Palestine has generally, more specifically, been a cause very deep to the Iranian people, particularly manifested after the coming of the Islamic Revolution. But more particularly for Iran, from where I look, for Iran, it's not just a question of the Palestinians. Iran is in the forefront of what, from a global South perspective, we call the international solidarity. And so from the global South, whether it is Cuba, whether it is Venezuela, whichever parts of the world where there have been anti-imperialist struggle, Iran has been in the forefront of it, the limitations of its own resources notwithstanding. And so, yes, it is an important day, but it is important to point out also that it is just one manifestation of an ongoing Iranian solidarity with the struggles of people in the global South.
Scott Ritter, the United Nations Human Rights Council has adopted a resolution calling for a halt to arms sales to Israel and for the regime to be held accountable for possible war crimes in the Gaza Strip. This is the first time that the top UN body has taken a clear position on the ongoing Israeli genocidal war. Now, this too will most likely be ignored by the Israelis. But what about those who support Israel? For example, the United States. These resolutions and these rulings, they'll have to eventually weigh down on the shoulders for being main supporters of this global pariah, Israel.
I don't think the United States is going to be governed by what happens in the United Nations. We never have been, especially when we're not the ones responsible for guiding UN policy. The tragedy is that America cares very little about international law when it comes to Israel. We don't give credence to how the world feels about Israel, and we are driven more by domestic American political imperatives, where Israel, you know, Israeli lobbies are major funders of the American politicians that we're hoping will step up to the plate and do the right thing. We won't do the right thing. We will never abandon Israel. We will never prevent the flow of arms to Israel, and this is just the sad reality of the American political dynamic today.
Farid Issac, have all the years of impunity and U.S. cover for Israel made this child-killing regime believe that it's above the law and it's safe from accountability? Now, close to 200 aid workers have been killed in the Israeli onslaught on Gaza. That's the highest number of aid worker deaths ever recorded in any conflict. That is no accident. So, coming back to my initial question, has the U.S. support emboldened the Israelis to this point?
Well, absolutely. I must point out, of course, the United States is the most formidable in its support for Israel, but the United States operates in complicity with many other countries in the global north. There is Europe, for example, particularly with England and Germany in the foreground. And so all of these, the global north entities, led by the United States, they've not only emboldened the Israelis, but they have continued to be behind. And of course, I mean, let me be honest with you and say that in this case, one never knows whether it is the dog wagging the tail or the tail wagging the dog, whether it is the United States emboldening Israel or Israel emboldening the United States. And I must say, all this kind of superficial differences that are being highlighted between Biden and Netanyahu, all of this, it's a game of smoke and mirrors. Behind the scenes, the larger question remains. The U.S.'s insistence that it is the prosecutor, the investigator, the executioner, of what they call international law and order. And so, yes, the U.S. has emboldened the Israelis and will continue to embolden the Israelis. And I agree with what Scott Ritter, whom it is a great honor to share a panel with, I agree entirely with what about the impunity of the United States and its allies. The U.S. has often been in single opposition to any kind of human rights steps that even the Security Council, with its own limitations, have been able to enact. So nothing is going to change as far as the U.S. and global power is concerned, except working at now at an immediate level, but also working on the long-term struggle against U.S. hegemony and U.S. imperialism. And that struggle is a multifaceted one that goes beyond the immediate conflict or the immediate genocide and resistance to it that's taking place in Palestine at the moment.
Mr. Ritter, the Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi just recently said that the passivity and weak position of some Arab countries has prevented the Islamic world from adopting a united stance against Israel and made the regime more brazen in committing crimes. That's something that you just alluded to in one of your previous answers. Have these Arab countries effectively turned their back on the suffering and death of their Arab brethren?
The short answer is yes. They've abandoned their Arab brethren in Palestine. But I mean, this is something that's been ongoing for decades now. These nations have allowed themselves to have their interests, that which defines them, shift away from notions of cultural identity, religious identity, to economic prosperity. They've been bought out with the illusion of wealth. But how wealthy can you be if you live in a fine home while the people or the citizens of Gaza are being slaughtered the way they are? When we talk about genocide, in order to embrace the notion of genocide, you first have to acknowledge that the people who are being targeted with these genocidal acts are humans, that they deserve to be treated as humans, counted as humans. But the sad reality is, in much of the Arab world today, the Palestinians aren't treated as humans. They're not treated as fellow Arabs or treated as fellow Muslims. They're treated as this this inconvenient reality that is at a minimum best to be ignored, and at best, best to be suppressed. The Arab nations are working hand in glove with Israel and the United States to do away with the Palestinian problem. The Arabs are every bit as complicit in this genocide as the Israelis are, as the Americans are.
Farid Yitzhak, same question to you. Why aren't regional blocs or Arab governments stepping up and taking matters into their own hands? Many officials have called on Muslim and Arab countries to openly express their opposition to Israel, sever ties with the Israeli regime. Why is that not happening? And how much of the situation today is a result of the complacency of Arab governments, especially the U.S. allies in the region?
Well, firstly, I would make a distinction between the Arab regimes and the Arab people.
Absolutely.
What the Arabs really think, we are not allowed to see. What the Arabs really think with their state or regime-controlled media, and worse than that is just the repressive kind of regimes that the Arab countries have to endure. That these regimes in no ways represent the Arab people. And the truth is that these regimes are governed by people who are really looking entirely at their own greed. And as Scott said, what are there no limits to your consumption? Are there no limits to yours or anybody else's, for that matter, need or greed for greater wealth? And so it is this connected to a certain kind of tribalism that they function on, especially in this case the Saudis, And then, of course, the mutual or the symbiotic relationship that there is between these Arab regimes and the United States. And regrettably, all of this not just overrides any sense of an Arab unity or a Muslim kind of solidarity with the Palestinians. What happens is that this, the Palestinian cause, and whatever little voices are raised, I mean, against it, it's really it's a sham. Today, for example, or yesterday, we saw that the United Arab Emirates, that they have recalled the ambassadors from Tel Aviv, and they have cut off diplomatic relations. But this was just in response to the huge outcry that there was with the UAE ambassador sitting with the Israelis 2-3 days ago at what the Israelis called a huge national or an Israeli breaking of the fast, as we know it is Ramadan. And so the Arab regimes, until they don't come to an end, until there isn't greater struggle for democracy in those countries, I'm afraid, you know, that we have no basis to hope that the Arab regimes will in a serious way throw in their lot behind the Palestinians.
Scott Ritter, this genocidal war has been met with a counter-reaction from resistance groups in the West Asia region. You mentioned the Houthis, but it's not just ending with the Houthis. There's been a unified response from the resistance fronts in Lebanon, with Hezbollah, with Iraq, with resistance groups in Syria. Were the Israelis in Washington expecting that from all the resistance fronts in the region, in your opinion?
I believe that anybody who follows the region and understands the relationship between the axis of resistance and the Hamas would have to understand that if there was a Israeli action against Hamas, against the Palestinians, that the axis of resistance would become involved. The question is to what level it was. There was belief in the United States that we could intimidate the axis of resistance through the threat of American military power into limiting the scope and scale of their involvement. But the Houthi have proven that this was a forlorn hope, and so have the resistance in with Hezbollah and what's going on in Iraq and Syria with the militias there. I think this did take us by surprise in the West, the collective West, especially in the United States. And now our worst nightmare is coming true, that this escalation is spinning out of control. We're now looking at the real possibility of a general war between Israel and Iran, depending on what happens in terms of an Iranian reaction to the criminal attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus by Israel several days ago. A conflict between Israel and Hezbollah would not be like 2006. It would be something totally different, one where Israel would more than likely be strategically defeated by Hezbollah. This is something that the Americans are aware of. And it's a conflict that we would not be able to contain. The outcome, the global consequences of conflicts of this scope and scale would be tremendous, especially in terms of its impact on energy security. And so the United States right now is struggling to come up with a means of containing this crisis. And the fact that we don't have a plan, that we are struggling, means that we didn't accurately forecast the potential for this conflict expanding the way it has.
All right, thanks a lot, gentlemen. Former UN Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter, joining us from Bethlehem, New York, and Board Member of Africa for Palestine, Mr. Farid Isaac.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments
with IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In the United States, the special counsel Jack Smith has slammed the idea that Donald Trump could claim classified documents as his personal records. Accepting such an argument would be pure fiction, the special counsel has argued. We take a look at the US media's coverage of this story. The national broadcaster ABC News has covered this story and tells us more. Special Counsel Jack Smith, responding on Tuesday 2nd of April to the judge overseeing former President Donald Trump's classified documents case, urged her to reverse course on entertaining the idea that Trump had any personal ownership over the classified materials that he has been charged with unlawfully possessing. In a late-night court filing replying to an order last month from Judge Eileen Cannon requesting proposed jury instructions that appear to accept at face value what legal experts have argued is one of Trump's most fringe defenses, that the former president had unchecked ability to claim all classified records as his personal property, Jack Smith argued that accepting such an argument would not only be pure fiction, but meritless and fatally undermined by all the evidence gathered by the government as part of their case. Among that evidence, according to Smith, are interviews with Donald Trump's own Presidential Records Act representatives and numerous high-ranking officials from the White House, none of whom had heard Trump say that he was designating records as personal. To the contrary, every witness who was asked this question had never heard such a thing, Jack Smith's office said. Smith's office repeatedly urged Judge Eileen Cannon that if she continued to entertain such an interpretation of the Presidential Records Act, she must inform the parties of that decision well in advance of trial, suggesting they'd seek relief from the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, which has already overturned her rulings twice in this case. The government must have the opportunity to consider appellate review well before jeopardy attaches, the court filing said. Trump last year pleaded not guilty to all charges relating to his handling of classified materials after leaving the White House, after prosecutors said he repeatedly refused to return hundreds of documents containing classified information ranging from U.S. nuclear secrets to America's defense capabilities. The former president has denounced the probe as a political witch hunt. In their court filing, the special counsel's office cited the 11th Circuit's previous opinion that they argued should make clear to Judge Cannon that Donald Trump had no personal interest over the documents seized in the FBI's 2022 search of Mar-a-Lago State. Plaintiff does not have a possessory interest in the documents at issue, so he does not suffer a cognizable harm if the United States reviews documents he neither owns nor has a personal interest in, the court filing said. As part of the filing, Smith's office also revealed a series of communications between Trump's team and the president of the conservative group Judicial Watch, Tom Fitton, which they argued showed his acknowledgement as early as February of 2022 that the classified records at issue in this case were presidential rather than personal. According to the court filing, even as Tom Fitton was advising an unnamed Trump employee that the records Trump possessed at Mar-a-Lago should have been characterized as personal, another employee urged Donald Trump to reject such an argument and explain to him why. Nevertheless, on 10th of February 2022, Trump released a statement claiming, in part, "I've been told I was under no obligation to give the material based on various legal rulings that have been made over the years," the court filing said. Before this time, the second employee had never heard this theory from Donald Trump. No other witness recalled Trump espousing this theory until after the Judicial Watch president conveyed it to him in February of 2022. CBS News has also covered this story and tells us more. Special counsel Jack Smith urged a federal judge to keep a presidential record-keeping law out of instructions that would be provided to the jury in the classified documents case against former President Donald Trump. According to court documents filed by Jack Smith's team late on Tuesday, 2nd of April, prosecutors warned that including the law in the instructions risked jeopardizing the proceedings and signaled they would appeal the judge's decision if she ruled against them. Last month, U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon, who is overseeing the case in Florida, asked Jack Smith and Trump's legal teams to file jury instructions based on two hypothetical scenarios. In one, the president has the authority under the Presidential Records Act to categorize any records as personal. Under this scenario, Judge Cannon wrote that neither a court nor a jury would have the ability to review the decision, a finding that could nullify much of the special counsel's case against Donald Trump. In the other, the jury would be able to examine a record that had been retained by a former president and make a finding that it was either personal or presidential under the Presidential Records Act. Under this scenario, it is possible that jurors could find that some official documents were mishandled. Federal prosecutors rejected both proposals and wrote on Tuesday, 2nd of April, that the Presidential Records Act, a 1978 law that manages the maintenance of White House documents produced during each presidency, should not play any role at trial at all, arguing that Donald Trump's alleged mishandling of classified records occurred after his presidency had ended. Donald Trump and Jack Smith filed separate proposals for jury instructions in the case on Tuesday, 2nd of April, although a trial date has yet to be set. Prosecutors said on Tuesday that both of Judge Cannon's hypothetical scenarios rest on an unstated and fundamentally flawed legal premise. Any jury instructions that include the Presidential Records Act risk distorting the trial, they said. Instead, the special counsel suggested jurors should only have to determine three elements of the case that amount to whether Donald Trump willfully retained national defense information without the authorization of the federal government. Jack Smith's team requested that if the judge opts to include language concerning the Presidential Records Act, she affords them ample time to appeal the matter to higher courts ahead of trial. The former president's legal team took the opposite view, writing that Judge Cannon correctly stated the law when she suggested the jury instruction that would have granted Trump much broader power under the Presidential Records Act. If the case is presented to a jury, which it should not be, the jury would be forced to resolve factual issues relating to not only the Presidential Records Act categorizations, but also documents' alleged classification status, Trump's defense team argued. In their own proposed jury instructions, Trump's legal team suggested that Judge Cannon tell the jurors that Trump was authorized to access the classified records during his presidency, and that certain precedents allow for former presidents to access certain documents. The special counsel charged Donald Trump in a 40-count indictment that includes 32 alleged violations of a national security law that makes it illegal to mishandle national defense information. Trump is also accused of engaging in an obstruction scheme as part of an alleged effort to thwart several investigators as they probed his retention of documents with classified markings.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
A blinding flash of white light lit up the sky over Gaza tonight. People running for cover, not knowing whether they're dead or alive. They came with their tanks and their planes, with ravaging fiery flames, and nothing remains, just a voice rising up in the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight. Women and children alike, murdered and massacred night after night, while the so-called leaders of countries afar debated on who's wrong or right. But their powerless words were in vain, and the bombs fell down like acid rain. But through the tears and the blood and the pain, could still hear that voice through the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight. Tonight, a blinding flash of white light lit up the sky over Gaza tonight. People running for cover, not knowing whether they're dead or alive. They came with their tanks and their planes, with ravaging fiery flames. Nothing remains, just a voice rising up in the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The World Health Organization says Israel's latest raid on Gaza's Al-Shifa Hospital has turned it into an empty shell with human graves.